Welcome to Witta Digital's Unsupervised, a podcast series that brings you personal perspective from the front line of modern visual effects. This is a closed door session, so come on in and shut the door behind you. My name is Maxwell Barrett, and today we were supposed to discuss Mulan, but we've had a change of plan. Instead, we have Chris White.
I'm a visual effects supervisor, and I've been at Weta Digital for 18 years, I think.
And Aidan Martin.
I'm an animation supervisor at Weta Digital. I've been here since 2013.
For joining us today to talk about
Space Force. We're here to talk about Space Force.
Our focus as a company was on the main character, Marcus, who was this space chimp, sent up as a kind of as a YouTube stunt, right?
Yeah, some sort of social media, a social media stunt with he and
Theodore.
Theodore the dog.
Yeah.
Marcus the chimp, the chimpstronaut.
Yeah. And it was for, as you guys know, it's for Space Force, which is a comedy.
A very dry black comedy.
Yeah. Our main goal was making the capsule, making Theodore, which would be all digital, and Marcus, who was an all computer-generated chimpanzee, and animate him throughout until he leaves and throughout working on the space shuttle. I mean, the space capsule.
When that was, it involved some full-body motion, and actually we ended up doing a lot of facial motion extensively throughout the whole piece. Even when, because we shared some shots with another studio, which was Zoic Studios, and I did a lot of the exterior work with Marcus and the space shuttle, not the capsule, the shuttle. But we still had to supply a lot of facial inserts into all those shots.
Exactly. So it was a combination of, like you said, full body work and then some of those facial close-ups and a bit of design work as well. Questions we had was that it's, how is it working on TV versus working on film? And Aidan and I have worked together on a couple TV projects now. A
couple of Netflix shows, Umbrella Academy, season 1 and 2, and now Space Force. So we've been doing a lot of chimps, a lot of TV chimps.
Yeah. How's it different? I guess in terms of being different, it's very similar. I mean, the schedule's a little bit tighter.
Yeah, for TV, you're getting approvals weekly because they're episodic, so they need more approvals more often.
Yeah, and it's one thing I've thought has been kind of fun about it is it's so quick. You know, we'd send off something and they would say, "Yep, approved." You know, move on.
Yeah, if it's pretty much your first pass, you sort of, you know, you sketch out the idea. Love it. Let's move on.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess with Space Force, it was kind of different because this was the first comedy I've done. I mean, I worked on Mars Attacks a long time ago. I guess I just remembered that. I worked on Mars Attacks. I think it was probably the only other comedy I did. But Mars has that same campy kind of.
Yeah, Mars Attacks was again that sort of offbeat, dry.
Yeah.
You know, sort of comedy, although it was probably a little bit more slapstick, whereas this for comedy impact, our part of it was to be played really straight-laced, though. So our character Marcus wasn't doing anything particularly humorous. Like he wasn't setting up the jokes. He was supposed to be really straight, played really straight. And obviously it's Steve Carell's performance and the live action cast still down on Earth, where the real comedy moments come from.
But you guys had to time those expressions and everything just right, and of that based on those beats.
Yeah. So when we would talk to the showrunner Greg, he would always, this is where the comedy is, and trying to figure out, you know, if we overplayed it, then he didn't think it read very funny or wasn't particularly right. And then
yeah, and that's what I thought was kind of interesting. Working with him, because I mean, we've been a fan of like Parks and Rec and The Office and stuff, and to hear his kind of process and talking about the audience. Oh, the audience should be at this point. This is where they're at, and they're not sure what's going on here and what's and that. So it's kind of interesting hearing that from a comedic point of view. Like, how do you set up these jokes?
Do you remember the first time we spoke to him in person? Because I mean, it was a Skype. It was a Skype call, and I think, I don't know what I really expected, because he would send big email notes that were pages and pages and paragraphs on, you know, the couple of shots or the couple of things that we sent him in previs, and you're like, oh my God, this guy is going to be so intense. And as soon as he got on, it was like, hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah.
And he was so nice and so sweet and stuff. And he was like, oh man, you were not the guy I expected to be on the other end of this call.
Yeah, no, I do remember those first ones. And I remember him taking notes of everybody who was on the call. He's like, okay, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so. And he was actively like, okay, you know, we weren't just like this service company over somewhere. He was like,
he was really into it.
He wanted to know who all the people were.
Who am I talking to? And what is your role? And how does this work out? Yeah.
Because he asked to call in, like, or did you bring in Craig? Or did he ask to speak?
I think he wanted to talk to Craig. So Craig Young being our lead animator and our mocap performer, Craig and I shot all the reference videos for the previs, and you know, once that was all signed off, we went down to stage and we did all the motion capture. And Greg was really interested in talking to Craig, you know, in particular, to get sort of, you know, to eyeball him up and make sure that he knew what he wanted for Marcus as a, you know, as a performance, you know, as an actor. And yeah, that was interesting. You really wanted to make sure that he wanted to talk directly to the person who was going to be performing his character.
Yeah. Which makes sense. You can see why he'd want to do it. And I remember too, even those, you know, because Marcus became such a real chimp, but those original artwork that we sent across, he was, you know,
caricatured. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was not what he wanted at all. So it was, because we were used to doing that, like having a representation of a chimp that's like a particular actor, but he was like, he just wanted a straight out chimp.
Yeah. Not hyper intelligent, nothing particularly special about him.
Yeah.
He's literally your average chimp who's been sent up into space and left
to die
essentially. Like, once the food runs out, it's like, well, we're not bringing him back. It's too expensive. So, like, and that's where we come in to Marcus. And so, from our point of view, it's like we're playing this chimp who's been left in the dark for weeks and hungry and, you know, has no interaction with anybody and is just sort of waiting to die of starvation.
Yeah.
Which is so bleak.
I know. Because I was trying to think of where we, because I remember we were trying to find his design. Because we looked at a bunch of online references, things like that, but then we went back to the Wellington Zoo, because we always have that good reference from apes, of those original apes. And the Wellington Zoo, and then what was it, Alexis, I think, was the one that we chose. And really, he was the guide for most of it, for him, because he had a good look. I think we made his brow a little bit deeper, but other than that, and different textures on him, he was an inspiration for it, which was good.
And just a good looking, like,
straight
chimp.
Yeah, and also had great reference from him as well. So that actually came along quick. We went from picking him went straight models, facial design. Got him textured and lit, and the next time they saw him, he was. And you had done that quick test
super quick sort of motion test, yeah. Sort of found some reference of that's the look, that's the idea. We want him to be, performance wise, we want Steve Carell's character to be talking at Marcus, and for Marcus to be sort of.
Yeah, they're not.
just drifting off into what else is shiny around.
Yeah. I remember thinking of those couple of shots where he is in a cage and you see him coming back and forth to the camera. It reminded me of one part where we were lighting it and we were having trouble getting lights in his eyes, and Greg had suggested this bank of like 5 LED light strips down below the camera. And it was very specific, and I was like, okay, well, you know, we'll try it. And for some reason, it worked perfectly. Like, it's like a non-conventional, like, we would usually bring in some rims or fills. But for some reason, that bank of lights actually worked really well. And it didn't give him that monster lighting we thought it would do.
Yeah.
So I always wondered if that was something they just randomly suggested. Or because it just surprisingly worked.
Or is it
so
now
well.
Something that, you know, because they don't do CG. Like, Greg in particular, hadn't worked with a lot of CG.
Yeah.
And, like a full CG character like this before, and so his suggestions are coming from like an on set being a really practical suggestion. So like, so the idea of like just to put some LEDs under his chin and or, you know, put or something like that is for us. It's like, well, I'm not sure if that's.
It's specifically that it was like a certain bank. It was like five lights. They should be this far apart, and they should sit right underneath the camera in this range. And it interesting that the, because we fight a lot, especially with chimps, highlights in the eyes, as you know, because you can't light it from the top because their brows are too thick, and those eye lights are very particular on being able to read their eye direction. And so putting a bank down there, but the width of those actually hit his eyes just right, that it didn't make him look scary or demonic or anything, but it got the lights in there. So it was interesting that it worked that well. There's one thing I guess it was tricky for us with Marcus was he was in that space suit.
Yeah.
And Greg had the concern of it looking too human, or if once you get to the wide shots, you'd lose a moment that he was a chimp. So we had done those tests where we elongated his helmet, which helped. It wasn't that typical human circular.
Yeah, which it had no practical use other than trying to make the design look less human.
Yeah. And he still, if you really think about it, how could that glass turn?
There's no way an oblong shaped
glass can actually lift and turn, but that's all right. It's you know. But then the suggestion that you had was good, which was the putting him in more of a chimp-like pose when he was floating in space to bring his legs up.
Mm.
Like that made a huge difference. Just that repose. People don't float like that.
Yeah, when he had the helmet off, it was fine. You totally bought that he was a chimp. And as soon as the helmet went on, it's like, that is just a dude in a suit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, so we really had to, and it wasn't a huge change. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of a repose, bringing the knees up and splaying his hips a little bit. And just making sure that he always had a bit of that C curl in his back to hunch him over a bit, just sold it all of a sudden. So he was always in a sort of a seated sort of curled over pose, because the chimps are always so hunched and always sort of tense and on edge all the time. That really helped.
So I think that was good, because that was like a multi-prong like kind of attack. Like you guys were looking at pose, we were looking at
the helmet
suit design and helmet and stuff like that, and those together fix that issue pretty quickly.
I guess there were some other things that we were talking about exploring, being like changing the boots. Yeah, either getting rid of the boots so you could see his feet, or changing the boots into gloves so we had five-fingered booties on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it was actually a really simple, effective solution.
Yeah, so that worked out pretty well.
On the stage when we were doing a motion capture, we had found this amazing way to do anti-gravity capture without all the ropes and without, you know, having to string Craig up and pull him around and on bungee cords and things. We just found this an office chair with no back on it, and it seemed to work perfectly just for Craig to sit on the chair and act out, and while I would just push him around the stage, you know, on this really low level, you know, easy to use system.
Yeah. Well, I remember that because I wasn't on the stage that day, but we saw those rushes start coming in. We're like, is he pushing around a chair? It's like, yeah, I think it's a chair, because it's those little small, you know, quad views. So we couldn't tell exactly what it was.
Worked so well. And because normally we're trying to get everything to be so, so grounded, and we were always chasing weight and, which adds a lot of reality to the scene. But in this situation, because he was floating in space and was essentially weightless, it worked perfectly that you couldn't really control it perfectly, and he would always sort of slide around and not necessarily, he would never really hit a wall properly. And it was always just spongy and just floaty enough that it was really handy. Yeah. Side note, this is Craig's. Craig got an actual performer credit for Space Force, which is he's been doing motion capture for 10 years or something now. And this is the first time he's ever actually been credited as a performer and not an animator. So, yay, Craig.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great for Craig.
What can we say about Theodore that isn't like we just stole a dog from GBS and changed his palette.
What can we say about Theodore? I mean, there was a bit of design work for Theodore, like his spacesuit. You know,
So did Gino design the spacesuit?
Yeah, so Gino designed the spacesuit for and we were trying to figure out, does he have booties on? Mm. You know, what looks cuter, little dog booties? How does the little tail gasket thing work? There was a little bit of design there. His helmet, which you actually see on the wall, if people are paying attention, is on the wall next
to the screen left side. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a dog helmet there. There's a bit of, and just kind of picking the right dog and.
Yeah. Cause there was a couple of, they were talking about a husky initially, weren't they?
Yeah. And they went with a Klee Klee Klee. Those are they types of huskies? I think they're types of huskies. I think.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Some sort of. But they were also talking about, what's the Australian sheepdog?
Oh, yeah.
This is embarrassing.
Cut yeah, I know, because you're from Australia. Shouldn't you know?
Yeah, not a blue heel. You know, the fluffy ones, the collie dogs, the border collie. Yeah, there you go. They were talking about border collies at one point, like a border collie puppy.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, is it a puppy? Is it a full-grown dog? Like, where are we scale-wise? Because I think early on in the previs, I had Marcus in that shot with throwing the rubber bone to Theodore, and they were about the same size.
Yeah.
And I think the size relationship was slightly wrong. They wanted Theodore to feel a bit more like a puppy and Marcus to be a bit more substantial. So his design evolved over... like the whole process, really.
Mm.
And considering he's only really in one shot or one and a half shots.
Yeah.
1.1.
Yeah. With this too.
We did a lot of work on Theodore just for that one shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did, you know, doing Theodore's tail. Gino had built a practical tail, because there was a whole discussion about how gory can that end of the tail be for that rating of that show. So he had done some artwork, but he quickly threw together this dog tail that he had made and airbrushed and painted, and it had that end piece on it. We sent that to models to end up being the guide, but it was nice to be able to do something practical, because he just walks in with this big dog tail that he made and said, what about this?
He's done that before, though. Like, what's an Umbrella Academy story, but yeah, remember when on Umbrella Academy he just there's this scene with some elk antlers or something.
Oh yeah.
And Gino, just after a meeting one day, just comes to me and says, hey, I've got some antlers if you want to borrow them. And so we went over to his workshop, and he literally had these antlers that were like 5 feet long.
Yeah.
Like, here you go, you can have those.
Thanks, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I always like that. I always do like doing the practical part, so it's not always on the machine.
And with Theodore's floating tail, remember when we didn't have fur on the tail initially when we sent the first version of the shot, and it was just this skinny little tail.
Yeah,
and we sent it, as soon as we turned the fur volume on and looked at it in the shot, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
That just looks like a floating turd.
Yeah.
And it was like, we can't actually send that back.
Yeah. So, I think we held that and rendered it until we...
Yeah, we held onto that for a long time before we sent that one back. We also had to integrate some practical shots. We had to integrate a practical piece of the capsule, inside the capsule, which was a tool wall within our CG set, and also the production shot some real-life, live-action sections with... somebody wearing the space gloves from Marcus's POV, like picking up the drill and things like that. But that was also, we had to do set extensions for that stuff too, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And that was a decision we made early on when we were looking at it and setting, like, where's the best place to spend our money and resources? Like, those shots seem like you could get a spacesuit and you could get, instead of building, digital tools and digital hands and doing all this stuff that made sense to do those as just live action shots. So that was decided actually even before we really began production. Yeah, I would say, the most enjoyable aspect of the show. I mean, I think it was a combination actually of both of you know, working with the client, working with Greg Daniels, learning this whole comedy aspect, and then having a good team, because these are all pretty much all the same guys that we've worked with before on Umbrella Academy. So we all work pretty well together, and that makes it easier, you know, that you get to focus on.
And it probably was a reason why it made sense for us to do it as well, because it wasn't a new team coming together that would have to sort of learn each other's sort of idiosyncrasies, for want of a better word. Helps that we sort of can hit the ground running really hard and just be like right into it straight off the bat.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks to all of our crew that worked on it. You know, everybody did a great job and had a good time with it, which was cool. And yeah, everybody at Weta and our clients over at Netflix.
Yeah. I want to thank Chris for being such a cool guy. always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
I want to thank Greg Daniels and Netflix for backing us. Also to the Motion team, I want to obviously thank Craig Young again.
Oh, I guess we should also make sure we thank Trent Smith Tessa. What was Tessa's? I think Kubicek, I think. Yeah, because Trent was the visual effects supervisor over on the with Netflix. Yeah. So Trent helped with quite a lot in the whole process, and definitely say thanks to those guys. Yeah, it'd be good to see more. Where we leave it off, you don't know what's.
Well, there was a scene. There was a scene that we did capture, and it was a big scene of.
You've been listening to Chris White and Aidan Martin on Unsupervised. Until next time, thanks for listening.